Good morning. I'm a teacher of history, high school by profession. One day, at the end of school, sitting alone in my classroom, I was upset with myself because I had been angry, quite angry, and expressed it, cussed a bit, and so forth and so on. Didn't take the Lord's name in vain, but used other words. I was embarrassed before Jesus for doing that. I was embarrassed before my adjuster as well, but I, for some reason, focused on Jesus that afternoon. And I will share with you one of the most precious experiences I've ever had with our Lord. It's a little difficult because sometimes when I think of his name, I get very choked up. I just have to think of his name. Hard enough to even say his name sometimes. So precious is he to me. Well, I'll do my best, but I make no promises. I'll just try to do my best. I was embarrassed, as I said, and I told him I understood the foolishness of being angry. As one writer put it once, anger blows out the lamp of the mind. It's not terribly useful or worthwhile. Anger. It's a foolish vice of the mind, heart. It's foolishness. So I talked to him a bit more and said I was sorry. Try to do better in the future. And then at some point he conveyed to me in substance I think he prefers to refer to me as Charlie than Charles. To Charlie, he would forgive your students. He conveyed this in substance, I'm sharing with you. See, you forgive your students the drop of a hat. You don't hold any resentments toward your students, ever. If they come to you with remorse for their foolishness, if they express their regret, you forgive them with no strings attached. No strings attached. Do you not do that? So I thought and said, yes, that's true, that is true. Jesus uses truth as well as love to show us the right path. You don't even give a second thought in forgiving your student. You don't even give a second thought. If any remorse, the slightest the justification you have, the slightest reason you have, you forgive them. Yes, I do, Master. I'm trembling a bit, so I have to hold on to this here podium. So much greater is my love for you. You need never fear You need never be concerned about my love for you. Never. I will never leave you alone. I will always be with you. Later I thought about his kind gift to me. And I thought about how he uses his truth to get your attention that you yourself wouldn't deny. It's really facts, meanings, and values that he uses as a kind of opening. And I also thought that his voice is the voice of the power and the grace of a Creator Son, a Master Creator Son. I call him Master Unbidden. But I have to tell you this morning there's something else. It isn't the voice only of power and grace. It is power and grace. When he touches me, I get completely touched. It's the most amazing thing. I'll never understand it. I feel it and experience. I'll never understand it. I just feel it and experience. But it's also, his voice is also the voice of true friendship. He speaks, he's powerful. Michael can stand at, so to speak, can stand at Salvington or stand at Urantia. He can turn his head or reach out his arm and touch paradise and he can also reach out and touch a place like Urantia at the same time. Probably the only person in Lebanon that can do that. All that power and grace. But he's a friend foremost. It's the voice of a friend. A true friend. A devoted, affectionate, loving friend. That heals a broken heart. And brings light to the joy in our heart. That's what friends do. God bless you.
It's interesting that what you chose to say, Charles, and the experience you chose to relate, because oftentimes when I need Jesus the most, and I talk to him all the time, I direct most of my prayers to him, but it's in times of self-doubt and even self-recrimination. And oftentimes, those things can be brought about in your own heart and your own mind because of something you've done that you're not especially proud of. But also they can be heaped upon you by some well-meaning friend. And the instance I'm going to share, and like you, Charles, I can't think about my master without my heart swelling in my chest. Almost to the point of breaking. Not for sorrow, but for supreme joy and humility in his presence. And I have this theory that the heart is a living well. The heart is a well of living water. And it can only get so full. The water has to go somewhere. So where does it go? Out through the tear ducts and down the cheeks. So like you, if I cry, you'll know why. Some emotions go beyond words. Some words have no meaning. Jesus is a meaning without a word. A person had made me feel bad about my spiritual self. This person had made me feel like if only I was a better person spiritually, I would have extraordinary experiences. Hear voices, see visions. And this person had made me feel really bad about myself. Like I was a real spiritual chump. And I said to Michael, you know, Master, everything I've done for you. give you all that I have, all that I am. And if I have disappointed you, I'm so sorry. Because I would never do that. I love you so much. I love you so much, Master. I'm so sorry if I've disappointed you. And that night, I had a dream. And in the dream, I was with all of you. And we were in the most beautiful banquet hall you can imagine. The table went on forever. And it was so beautifully appointed with fine crystalline plates and goblets full of clear sparkling water and glasses of wine and beautiful place settings with silverware. And we were all together at this banquet. Oh, it was so beautiful. And we were laughing like we always do and talking. So glad to be in each other's company. So full of love and joy just to be with each other. And someone came up behind me and put their arms around me. And I couldn't see them. Have you ever been sitting at a table and someone comes up behind you and puts their arms around you? Fine, strong arms, the strong arms of a man that a woman loves to feel around her. And he hugged me so hard. And I touched his arm. And I said, "Who is this?" And I turned to see his face. And I said, "It's Michael." And I cried in his arms. And he just held me and let me cry. And I knew in that feeling of that strength and all the love that being has for me and for all of us. He doesn't want us to be disappointed in ourselves or think that he is disappointed in us. He knows who we are and how hard we try. And there's peace and there's love and there's release of guilt and shame and doubt and blame. And that's what he said. You will know the truth in his beautiful musical voice, which I hear in my ear when I read the Arantia book. In the ear of my spirit, I hear it, his beautiful musical voice. You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. What will it make you free from? From guilt and shame and blame and doubt and fear and sorrow. So thanks for bearing with me through that.
Thank you, Paula, for that, and reminded me of back in the day when I worked at Jesusonian and Good Cheer Press, and we would start out each week with Monday Moments with the Master under his banner. We would pray and dedicate our week's work there to everything he wanted us to do, and it was really special. And it was, I think it was actually during that time that this happened at my house. I had moved to Golden, and my daughter had to take the bus to school, and I had to drive about a mile and a half or so to go pick her up when she got home. And as I went to pick her up this one day, there was somebody sitting next to her on the ground crying. And she brought this woman home, and she explained that she was a transgendered homeless person who had moved to Colorado from another state to be with a lover who had just kicked her out and she had nothing. And she had suffered a lot of verbal abuse in the meantime. And I felt myself taken aback because I didn't know how to relate to a transgendered person. And so I said my prayer and I said, Jesus, you know, let me have your mind because mine's not working real good right now. And I know this person needs something. And I sat down and I talked with her. And I heard the gospel of the kingdom coming out of my mouth as I said to her, you are a child of God and you deserve to be treated with respect. You deserve to have true love in your life. And as I paused, I heard, this message is for you too. And I was living in a verbally abusive situation. And I felt his love encompass me as I ministered to her. And we talked for a couple of hours, and at the end of the time, I embraced her. And I really remembered this incident when Phil asked me, because as I embraced her, she said to me, God brought me here today to hear what you had to say.
I was asked to share something. I went into the mind arena of choice because that's where I usually go. It's a good place to start. Sometimes it's hard for me to make the transition from the mind arena into the heart, and usually I do it through music. Works the best for me. And often I feel that eloquence, like some of my friends out here and some who have preceded me. But the thing about the Urantia book is that it never fails in its eloquence. And I was thinking about some thoughts I wanted to share on how I know when I hear the Master's voice. And the first thing I thought about was that the Spirit of Truth, the Master Spirit, the combined spirit of the Father and the Son. And I was reading, it says, the Spirit of Truth is concerned primarily with the revelation of the Father's spirit nature and the Son's moral character. So I was thinking about that and trying to put that together with the mind arena of choice. And I was thinking about, well, choice and morality. And our first moral choice is when we get the gift of the Spirit of the Father. And then I remembered, every time man makes a reflective moral choice, he immediately experiences a new divine invasion of his soul. And I thought, wow. Yeah, okay. So how do I get this divine invasion? How do I invite this divine invasion? And well, it's pretty clear. A moral choice. And then the moral choice and the Spirit of Truth. And so it began to coalesce a little bit with the truth and morality. Telling the truth. The entire experience of a juster communion is one involving moral status, mental motivation, and spiritual experience. So this morality thing kept popping up in my thinking here. And then cosmically moral and divinely spiritual character represents the creature's capital accumulation of personal decisions, which have been illuminated by sincere worship, glorified by intelligent love, and consummated in brotherly service. And I went, oh, yeah. Now we're tying this all together. Choice, truth, morality, service, love. Moral evaluation with a religious meaning, spiritual insight, connotes the individual's choice between good and evil, truth and error, material and spiritual, human and divine, time and eternity. So all these things were working together to, in my mind, and in a personal level, the Master has spoken to me in this way through music and through creative expression. I guess I want to share a poignant moment of a song that I received, that I wrote one time after a deep meditation. And it was the most profound experience of the Master that I had ever had. And I wrote it, and it was a song about the Master. And one day maybe I'll share it. It's so precious to me, as I can relate with Charlie. It's so precious that I've never played it for anybody. Maybe that's selfish, or I don't know. Maybe it's just precious. But one day I'd like to play it for y'all. The Spirit of Truth is concerned primarily with the revelation of the Father's spirit nature and the Son's moral character. It came back around again to morality. And this divine invasion of the soul, I try to make decisions, moral decisions, so I can get that divine invasion of the soul, because you've all experienced it, and you know, when you make those decisions, and you get that divine invasion, and you feel the Master, and He's in you, and He's around you, and He's guiding you, you just absolutely know it. So that's how I hear it, in the echoes of righteous harmony. Bless you all.
Good morning. A few weeks ago, Phil made a request to a group of Urantians online, who many of whom were not going to be here today, and asked them to send in experiences that they'd had hearing Michael's voice. Michael, you continue showing truth and illuminating the way forward, the way of living love, especially in the pulsing fabric of my relationships with my brothers and sisters. Indweller of my soul, lover of my soul growth, I accept you as a partner in my decisions. And divine spark driving me towards truth and truthfulness, I love you. Our universe is your creation. Our planet is of your making. We are in your cosmic family. Our home is of your making. You are the source of love for us and the giver of the Spirit of Truth. When we remember you, we are encircled in your loving care. My mouse isn't working, so I can't page down for the rest of this. I'm going to try to remember it. There's one particular that caught my fancy. On a daily basis, the Master comes into my life. He helps me to see the Father through Him. In times of deep trouble, He has picked me up. I've been having problems with one of my teenage children. I'm getting to the end of my rope, wondering if I can go on, what my options are. I hear his voice saying, "Remember Jude?" And I start to laugh. And I think, "That's right. You spent the weekend in jail with him one Passover weekend. Loving him, supporting him, but letting him feel the consequences of his action. Protecting his privacy and not sharing it with the family when we got home. Waiting until it was time for Jude to admit of his own will what he had put you through. I remember you when I'm driving and I'm praying. And your voice illuminates my thoughts. I often pray when I'm driving. I pontificate. I get really full of myself. And I hear you laughing at how ridiculous it is for me to take myself so seriously, because all of the most eloquent words come from you. All of our most eloquent thoughts come from you, Master." Introducing one of our rising stars, a truly devoted servant, and our final plenary speaker of this spiritually infused summer study session 2009, is truly an honor. I feel privileged to be getting the chance to know him better these past few years, and to be inspired and energized by his positive attitude and love-saturated soul. He's a carpenter, as is my own husband and Christina's. And let me take this opportunity to say to the lovely, historic Rebecca of Nazareth, your instincts were right. Being married to a carpenter is a very good thing. He lives in southern Vermont with his wife and two children. He's an active member in his community as a school board member and the chair of a committee charged with rebuilding the local high school, a 100-year-old high school. He is co-founder of the Eden Tree Fellowship, a local interfaith organization that seeks to advance religious thought and understanding through local community forums. He's kind of my hero. He's a general counselor with the fellowship and chairman of the UAI International Conference Committee. He also serves as a teacher facilitator for the Urantia Book Internet School. And his personal passion for service spearheaded a whole conference last summer at UCLA, for which the theme, "The Thrill of Loving Service," really inspired all who attended. Certainly it inspired me. He's a refreshingly real and humble speaker with a great sense of humor. Let's give a warm and enthusiastic welcome to Phil Taylor.
Thank you. Thank you all. That was absolutely fantastic. And when we were putting this together, I mean, we're just kind of doing it by the seat of our pants and at the last minute, and we had no idea how that would turn out. And just with that music and all your wonderful insights about Michael and your experiences with him, that we thank you all, because that just turned out tremendously. And thank you for that wonderful introduction. I'm very humbled to have such an introduction like that. Well, before I started my speech here today, I did want to just do a couple shout outs and a big thank yous to some people who've done a lot of work here today. And I know Barbara's going to get up and do a bunch of thank yous after me, but I just wanted to thank Barbara for all her work and putting on this conference, and I think it's... I certainly think the spirit is in the house and in this conference tonight, and I know we're all going to go home with our spiritual batteries recharged and ignited for more thrilling service adventures back home. You know, and I also just wanted to thank one other person who's been doing quite a lot, and that's Christina. She's just been doing a wonderful work. And, you know, talking about flying by the seat of her pants, she pulled together that ceremony last night, which I think was just a wonderful initial start of, looks like something that will become a great tradition with the fellowship and with the general council members. And I appreciate her initiative. And Meredith, I think you had something to do with that, too. We appreciate your initiative in making that happen, because that really adds to the culture and strength of our organization. So thank you. So let me first say it is great to be back here at this conference among the living. I think it's probably pretty common knowledge that I've only spent half the conference here. On my way down to the conference on the airplane, I was stricken for the second time in a week with a bout of the stomach flu, and ended up shacking up in a hotel by the airport until I was better. And I will say one thing. It's that public knowledge of the fact that you've had a stomach flu really puts a damper on the way people welcome you when you come into a conference. I had people come on up and say, "Oh, Phil, how you doing? Good to see you. Good to see you. I got a workshop to go to." I will say there were a couple people who really did give me a genuine and warm embrace. They couldn't be with us today, I'm sorry. I hope they're going to have a speedy recovery. So, given all this has gone on in the past week, I feel a little bit unprepared for my talk today about the consciousness of Michael. You know, it was my intention to spend the past week in a lot of prayer and contemplation on this speech in preparation. And while it was true I was doing a lot of praying, it was just more praying towards a porcelain god than a god of the eternal universe. Anyway, I'll stop with the jokes about the stomach flu. So, what I wanted to talk to you today was, as I said, about this consciousness of Michael. And when I first started out on this, preparing this speech, I do what I always do. And I went to Michael and I said, "I lay this speech before you as an opportunity for you to speak through me and to give me some insights of what you would like to share." And I had the idea in mind that I was going to talk about the consciousness of Michael from the terms of my own personal experiences, because that's always a place that I like to speak from. But when I shared this with Michael, it didn't seem that that was what he wanted me to speak about. Because I remember the thought coming to my mind was that consciousness of me is for each and every person to decide and discern for themselves. And that it was purely a personal and an individual thing. So then I knew that I wasn't going to speak about that consciousness in that respect. So I said, "Okay, Michael, what is it that you want me to talk about?" And so after praying about it, the thought came to my mind was togetherness. And I said, "Okay, well, how does that relate to consciousness of you?" And so I did what I do a lot when I get a word like that comes into my mind, and I went to the dictionary and looked up the definition of togetherness. And the definition that I found was into a union with wholes or parts, so as to be combined or joined with each other. And then I began to think about my audience and the people who I was going to speak to today. And I knew that I would be speaking to a large number of people who are general council members, TDA members, people who are leaders in their societies, and some folks from the UAI. But in large part, I was going to be speaking to a lot of people who labor for this revelation in groups and in their work together. And I knew that was what I was going to speak about. I was going to speak about consciousness of Michael in our work together, as we work together in labor and strive to serve this revelation, strive to serve our God, and strive to serve our fellows. And it became more apparent that this was really an apropos subject, because I know, as you all know, we've been talking about this issue a lot in the General Council and on the SOC admin list, because one of the things that we're finding that we're having a lot of challenges or struggles with is this problem of working together in groups, because we are often experience friction and the challenges of working together. And I certainly don't mean to imply that we never succeed. There's a lot of success in our work together as groups, and we do have a lot of great stories and successes that come out of it. But in a lot of ways, we are experiencing a lot of conflict and friction in our work together. Right now, you know, the General Council is struggling with finding a common direction and setting up a strategic plan. And we're talking about the struggles that we have in the difference of the opinions and the difference in opinions and the outlooks of the various General Council members. We have people who believe in aggressive growth of dissemination, while other people are more about slow growth. There's people who are very idealistic, and there's others who are extremely practical. There are people who are fiscally conservative, and some people who want to be liberal with that money and let you put it to good use. There's people who believe in the certification of teachers, and people who completely disagree with that idea. And we find that in our work together, that we truly are a representative group of diverse individuals and diverse opinions. But in these diversity, we find that there's often conflict sometimes, and when we try to work together. Now, one thing that we can say is that in so many ways this conflict is good. After all, we're Urantia Book readers, and by nature we're strong-willed, independent-minded, free-thinking individuals. We are not sheep. We are, by nature, because we are attracted to this book, strong-willed individuals. I think that had to be so. There's so many people here who came from different backgrounds and really had to, you know, some people who have Jewish backgrounds or Catholic backgrounds or Baptist backgrounds, and you all had to be really strong-willed and independent-minded to be able to stand up for this revelation. But given all that, we still do have these challenges. There's great diversity in our opinion, and from this diversity, great things can come about. I think one of the great things that I find in this pattern of the universe is how many great things that come out of divergent ideas and differing of opinions. Conflict can really be rewarding. But the fact remains is that we still have to find ways to work together in love and in service, as the Master asked us to love and serve each other. So how is it that we can deal and work with these struggles and these differences of opinions and conflicts and still find ourselves in loving service to one another? Well, this is where we find the need for the Master. And especially we need a consciousness of the Master. Because after all, who is it that would better teach us to love and serve our fellows than the Master? And I believe it is in the consciousness of the Master that we can find effective group functioning. Now, I know some of you are thinking, well, hold on a minute there, because didn't the Master always step aside in relationship to the group? After all, we know from reading about the apostles that quite often when the apostles had these struggles and these challenges of working together, especially when the disciples of John and the apostles, poor Andrew had to go to Jesus and said, hey, help us figure this out. And Jesus would say, oh no. He said, I stand aside from that. That is for you to figure out for yourself. In fact, he said a great line there. He said, "It is not wise for the parent, for the host, to participate in the family troubles of his guests. A wise parent never takes sides in the petty quarrels of his children." So then how is it that the Michael is there present in our group? After all, don't they say, "Wherever two or more gather in my name, there I am"? Isn't Michael there a part of us? How is it that he's standing aside and that yet still with us? Well, I think the answer is in the fact that he is with us in our relationship as individuals. I think it was once said, and I forgot to bring the quote, but "I am a representative of the Father to the individual, but not to the group. If you have purely religious, come to me for your purely religious and spiritual problems. But to those other problems, those problems of how the group functions, that's for you to decide for yourself." So it's in this consciousness that I think we can find effective group functioning. Because after all, it is Michael who is guiding us how to truly love and serve our fellows. And though he may not be helping us make those decisions, he's truly helping us to love and understand one another. To better explain kind of what I'm trying to say here, I wanted to go back to the example of my two children and their petty quarrels and my attempt to be a wise parent and not take sides in those petty quarrels. My son Zachary and my daughter Allie are 3 and 6 respectively, and they basically are putting the P and Q in petty quarrels. Right now, they are just constantly going on one another. In fact, I was talking to my wife on the phone yesterday, and we talked for about 5 minutes. And I would say we communicated during that time for about 30 seconds, because the other 4.5 minutes was spent with my wife being on the phone saying, like, no, Zachary, put that down. No, Allie, get your finger out of your brother's eye. No, stop that. No, put that down. And that's kind of what it's like with the kids. And I'm trying to be that wise parent and find a way where I cannot take sides, but still teach my daughter, because my son's still too young right now, but still teach my daughter how to really, truly love her brother and care for him. And I remember, you know, one time she came up and she said, Zachary just stole my favorite marker. And I said to her, well, why don't you give him some more markers and maybe some paper so he can some color some more? And I was trying to do that in a way that I could teach her to love. And as you are giggling, I can tell, you can see that it totally did not work. But you get the point of what I'm trying to do here. And I think that's what it's like with our relationship with our Master. As we try and work together in our groups, and as we try to love and understand one another, but at the same time reconcile these differences, we find that the Master is always there, guiding us into those appropriate ways in which we can truly love and serve our fellows. He's guiding us in a way that we can help us find those loving responses, in which really, to me, take form in the fruits of the Spirit. For I think that is really where he can guide us the most. Because if you look at these fruits of the Spirit, the love, the joy, the peace, the long-suffering, the gentleness, the goodness, the faith, the meekness and temperance, these are all qualities that are found in relationships to our fellows. And it's as he fosters these fruits through our communion with him that he allows this group to function more effectively, to more lovingly, and to withstand the struggles and the rigors and the challenges of the tests that come about from working with a diverse order of groups. And I think the funny thing is that as we experience these challenges and these struggles, we tend to kind of beat ourselves up a bit. We tend to look at these irritations and these aggravations is sort of an indictment of our love for one another. As if, you know, we're really not being true to Michael and not being true to the group because we're being irritated sometimes by our fellows or sometimes we're failing to understand them. But the fact of the matter It's just a normal part of our training in our ascension career. All these struggles that we have in working with groups, they're a part of the socialization of our Mirancha personalities. And that training begins right now. In fact, it continues on up all the way to Adentia, where they say we will be chiefly occupied with the mastery of group ethics, the secret of pleasant and profitable interrelationships between the various universe and super-universe orders of intelligent personalities. That's from paper 43 in the Constellations. And they continue to go on to tell us that we will continue to learn how to live happily, work effectively, abide joyfully, and cooperate heartily with diverse universe beings. These struggles, these challenges that we have in working with our groups, they're all a natural course of our universe career. And while we may get frustrated at times, they're really opportunities to be embraced and to partner up in consciousness with Michael and say, show me the way. Show me the way to better love and understand my fellows. Because the fact of the matter is, and we all know this, that if we can get groups working together, great things can happen. They tell us that the sum of 10 men lifting together is far greater than the sum of 10 lifting alone. They tell us that two personalities working together in spiritual harmony is something far more than double the potential, but more like quadruple the potential that stands for us. And this power that we have in getting these groups to function together can really create something incredible and special. Because what it is creating is something of a spiritual culture that I think is a powerful statement of the character of our organization and the people who are working for it. Because when we get these people working together, it's not like just one person standing out living as Jesus lived again, but it's a group of people standing out living together as Jesus lived again. And that's perhaps what we need most, because I can't think of any greater tool of dissemination than this powerful spiritual culture of men and women dedicated in loving service to one another, in consciousness of Michael, and serving this revelation, because I think that's what's going to attract people to this organization and to this revelation. I want to speak of one more thing right now. And then I was going to read to you just something from the vine, about the vine and the branches. But one of the great challenges I think we have as an organization, as groups, is coming to a greater understanding of the Father's will. That was one thing that always amazed me about when Jesus said, you know, when you're making your decisions, I'm going to leave the group be by itself. I can always imagine Andrew just kind of saying there to Jesus, like, Are you sure you don't want to be in on this? Because we have a really good chance of screwing this up big time. But you know what? Jesus was cool with that. He was, you go ahead and make your decisions. You know, I leave this gospel to you. I leave this revelation to you. I entrust you to make those decisions. And I think why he could entrust us so much is that if he knew that if a group of men and women can get together in loving association with one another, they truly could make great decisions. Because it's in that loving association with one another we increase the capacity to really truly know the Father's will. You know, one individual sitting down and trying to seek the Father's will, you know, there's a good chance they're gonna find it out for a given situation or a given decision. But a lot of times I think just one individual gets just part of it, doesn't see the whole thing. You know, it's delimited of the mortal viewpoint. But if you get five or six people, you know, or a group of people dedicated to seeking the Father's will, I bet there's a really much better chance that you're going to find that will, because you're eliminating the possibility of error. You're increasing the potential of that group. But the fact of the matter is, we can only find the Father's will if we maintain this true loving connection with the Master and yield these fruits, spiritual fruits in our associations with our fellows, because it's in those yielding those spiritual fruits that these contrasts and friction that can occur in this diversity can subside, so that we can truly come to a sense of unity of purpose, where we can really find the power in group decision making and finding the Father's will. And before I go with you today, actually I just have to get my book, so hold on a sec. I want to read to you today just the vine and the branches, because I think that really just brings it on home. And Jesus said, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. I am the vine, and you are the branches. And the Father requires of me only that you shall bear much fruit. The vine is pruned only to increase the fruitfulness of its branches. Every branch coming out of me which bears no fruit, the Father will take away. Every branch which bears fruit, the Father will cleanse, that it may bear more fruit. Already are you clean through the word that I have spoken. But you must continue to be clean. You must abide in me, and I in you. The branch will die if it is separated from the vine. And the branch cannot bear fruit except as it abides in the vine. So neither can you yield the fruits of loving service except you abide in me. Remember, I am the real vine, and you are the living branches. He who lives in me and I in him will bear much fruit of the Spirit and the experience, the supreme joy of yielding this spiritual harvest. If you will maintain this living spiritual connection with me, you will bear abundant fruit. If you abide in me and my words live in you, you will abide, you will be able to commune freely with me, and then can my living Spirit so infuse you that you may ask whatsoever my Spirit wills, and do all this with the assurance that the Father will grant us our petition. Herein the Father is glorified, that the vine has many living branches, and that every branch bears much fruit. And when the world sees these fruit-bearing branches, my friends who love one another, even as I have loved them, all men will know that you are truly my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Live in my love, even as I live in the Father's love. If you do as I have taught you, you shall abide in my love, even as I have kept the Father's word and evermore abide in his love." Thank you.